Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include June 29th at Union Hall in Brooklyn, July 8th live at North Bar in Chicago, July 9th at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, July 10th and 11th, I'll be opening for Ian Carmel at the Comedy Attic doing stand-up. July 12th, headlining a venue I still don't know the name of for some reason in Indianapolis. And then July 19th, right back at the Virgil here in Los Angeles, competitive erotic fanfiction. Third Sunday of every month, always free. Today's show was recorded at the 2014 Limestone Comedy Festival in Bloomington, Indiana. It features Adam Posse, Mahdi Litwack, Ben Moore, and Carmen Lynch reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. Give it up for your first round one comic who's brought a prepared piece, Ben Moore, ladies and gentlemen, Ben Moore.
Either one of these?
Brian, everybody, his voice is erotic. You sit here and stare at me while I be erotic? Okay.
My night with Tootsie. As the alarmingly muscular hand of the famous actress Dorothy Michaels firmly gripped my erect penis, all I could think was go, Tootsie, go. We had met at the hotel bar and I felt like I was in a dream. I said I was a big fan of her work. She put her hand on my thigh and said, "How big?" We went straight up to her room, and I couldn't believe I was about to make love to a celebrity, her being the star of my favorite daytime soap opera. There were those who said she was not conventionally attractive, but in my eyes, this only made her more beautiful. Nothing had been handed to her, and she took what she wanted in a horrible business, and tonight, she wanted my big, throbbing, purple, veiny statuette. I wanted her to use me up to give me a sense of her indomitable spirit. I wanted to learn from her, but more than that, I wanted to come on her wig. Was that a wig? Wait, what's going on? There was a knock at the door and Dorothy ran to hide in the bathroom. I pulled up my pants quickly and threw on a hotel robe. Upon opening the door, a large man dressed as a hotel employee pushed a cart stacked with covered dishes into the room. His face looked like he had recently been beaten, and he had on a large metallic medical halo device, the kind you wear when you've broken your neck. "Did she already pay for this?" I asked. "For you, Mrs. Michaels, it's on the house." "Thank you. Wait," I said. "What did you call me?" "Mrs. Michaels, ma'am. Tootsie. Is this a test?" "No, thank you," I said. The large man backed out of the room, regarding me with a respect and fear that made me nervous. I turned to find Tootsie fully dressed and sitting at a table in the corner of the room. She was wearing a long, glittery, red sequined outfit and smoking a cigarette. She was confident, menacing, and possibly perfect. How could she have had time to change? "Why did he call me Mrs. Michaels?" I asked. "Why did he think I was you?" "You already know the answer," she said. "Just think, why would anyone mistake me for you? Because I am you. You're me." "Bingo," she said. "You are the actor, Michael Dorsey. You became me to get what you wanted. I'm all the things you wanted to be. You couldn't get hired as an actor. I wouldn't take no for an answer. You couldn't hold down a relationship, but I could. You are a better man as me as a woman than you ever were as a man as a man. I fuck like you wanna fuck, you macho shithead. As she said this, she flung her lit cigarette aside and dropped to her knees. She opened my pants. It was definitely a wig. The carpet was catching fire from the lit cigarette, and I began to remember. I had had insomnia. I had been out of work. Had I been sleeping longer and longer at night recently, or had I been Tootsie more and more? As Tootsie, I had been hired on daytime television, but that wasn't enough. I'd also started several small groups across the country where men and women dressed as Tootsie were meeting in basements in secret and doing acting workshops. For some reason, these all devolved into underground drag queen mixed martial arts exhibitions. Tootsie style. Tootsies were infiltrating society at every level and peeing in people's food. Insane week-long orgies started happening where, regardless of sex, everyone just looked like Tootsies. Celebrities appeared and were videotaped being filleted, but Tootsiness guaranteed anonymity, and so now everyone was finally free. 3, 4, 6 ways, whole town showing up at the courthouse to fuck indiscriminately. All the hot Tootsie group sex action you could imagine was taking place all over the country. Just slap a wig and big old glasses on it and fuck it. That's all anyone cared about anymore. We were the all-singing, all-dancing Tootsie crap of the universe. We are God's unwanted Tootsies. Tootsie felt that only once you lost everything were you able to do anything. She was my hero and my nightmare. Just then, my roommate, you know, Bill Murray, he walked in. He must have tracked me down and wanted to discuss the necktie scene. At this point, I had decided that the only way to cure my multiple personality disorder was to shoot myself in the head. When Bill walked in, I was dressed as Tootsie, lying on the bed, contorted unbelievably in such a way that my own penis was in my mouth and the barrel of a gun I was holding pointed at my head. The room was mostly on fire. He took a single shrimp from the room service tray, popped it in his mouth, and said, "Now this is one wacky hotel."
Nicely done, Ben Moore. Keep it going for Adam Pozzi.
Yes, sir.
Inspector Gadget, Penny, and Brain were walking through the park. His gadget phone rang. He held it up to his ear saying, "Is that you, Chief? You're where? I'm on my way." Gadget then went to an empty park bench. Gadget said. "He's supposed to be here."
"Right here, Gadget,"
said the chief, poking just his head out of a trash can. Because the rest of him was naked. "Here's your mission." The chief hands Gadget a piece of paper. Like an idiot child, Gadget reads it aloud. "The evil Dr. Claus suspected of planting a bomb at a local drag show. Your mission is to find the bomb and arrest Dr. Claw and any other mad agents. Warning, this message will self-destruct. You can count on me, Chief. I'm always on duty," Gadget said, balling up the message and tossing it into the naked chief's trash can while walking away like an oblivious moron. The message explodes. When the smoke clears, the chief stands there, naked, with his face and dickhead singed from the explosion, saying to himself, "Why do I put up with him?" Meanwhile, Inspector Gadget is bidding farewell to Penny and Brain and leaves for his mission. Penny then turns to the dog and says, "Well, Brain, looks like the rest of the day is up to me and you," while producing a jar of peanut butter from her backpack. Flash forward. Inspector Gadget enters a nightclub looking for any suspicious activity. He then sees the stage and instantly becomes enthralled with the two gorgeous drag queens lip-syncing to Destiny's Child's Bootylicious. From the stage, both mad henchmen are startled to see Inspector Gadget on their off day. and can't help but stare nervously at him while twerking. They awkwardly finish the song and flee the stage. From the crowd, Gadget is thrilled to find the two drag performers staring at him lustily, he thinks. As their song finishes, he heads backstage to meet them. In the dressing room, the henchmen are hastily packing their things to leave when the door is kicked open. They freeze at the sight of Inspector Gadget when he says, "I saw you two ladies from the stage, and I've come to claim that butt, Lucy." I learned that in a porn. The henchmen are relieved as they remember that Gadget is a goddamn idiot and shrug to each other as if to say, "Why not?" They then hike up their dresses. "Go, go, Gadget, lube," says Gadget, and the caps at the tip of both his pointer fingers flip open, exposing two KY shooters. "Are you two ready for this?" The henchmen nod anxiously, getting more into it with each second. "Go, go, Gadget, arms." "Arms?" say the henchmen. Two long robotic arms snake out from the sides of his body, while each KY shooting finger covers the opposing arm in lubricant. Gadget then snakes his arms around each henchcock, jerking them off with the slick robotic limb, while his hands travel up underneath between their legs to thumb them both in the ass. As though Gadget was showing his approval for something really hard. "Let's change it up a little," Gadget says. He then has both the henchmen bend over, facing opposite directions while spreading their cheeks, both of their puckered holes lined up perfectly with one another, making their chubby asses look like a couple of fat-faced gargoyles blowing each other a kiss. Gadget then places the top of his head between them, saying, "Go, go, Gadget! Copter!" "Copter?" question the henchmen. Gadget's copter blades come out, but the blades have now been modified, each of them with a prosthetic tongue on the edge of it. The blades start whirring, tossing both henchmen salads at hyperspeed. "Now for the grand finale," says Gadget. He stacks the henchmen on top of each other, both their asses looking like two cock-hungry mailboxes in front of a duplex. "Go, go, Gadget! Dick!" "Finally!" yell the henchmen. Gadget starts pounding them both with mechanical precision, each pump taking him out of one henchman and thrusting him into the other in such a perfect motion that only a half-man, half-cyborg could pull off. Climaxing, the inspector yells out, "Go, go, Gadget, jizz!" The henchmen brace themselves, waiting to see which one of them he explodes inside. But when it happens to neither one, they then turn to see Gadget with his arms open wide and a cap flipped off of each pinky finger as he covers the walls in robo-jizz. Gadget then notices that the room is a side door that is slightly ajar. He leaves the exhausted henchman and rushes through the door. As he enters, he recognizes and sees... sees Dr. Claw's chair, and he sees that it's shaking around. He also hears a guttural grunting and growling. He concludes that Dr. Claw is masturbating to something on the monitors. Gadget goes to place the cuffs on him while saying, "Now I've got you, Dr. Claw." "Oh, God, Penny!" Gadget sees that what Dr. Claw was jerking off to was security footage of Penny in the park they were at earlier, on her back with her legs spread as her dog Brain laps peanut butter from her young pussy. Like a dog lapping peanut butter from a young pussy. That's where I ran out of metaphors. He then sees that it wasn't Dr. Claw jacking off at all, but rather a disembodied fake arm wearing Dr. Claw's metal gauntlet, a spiked wristband, jacking off a disembodied fake penis with a spiked cock ring. Gadget then hears from the monitor, "You may have ruined my drag show, but I'll get you next time, Gadget. Next time."
Thank you.
Adam Pazzi. Keep it going for Carmen Lynch.
All right, this is called The Princess Dried. Buttercup was very beautiful from about 47 feet away. So she had to change her name legally to Butterface. Butterface had a huge problem besides being a butterface. Her vagina was dry all the time. So dry that if cell phones had existed back then, people would have been like, "Pardon me, miss, I dropped my phone in the river and I don't have any rice. Can I stick it in your cooch?" Please. And It would have saved their fun. Butterface welcomed any man in the village to try and moist her muff, but her crotch was like the sun. Every man who went down on her came back thirsty, tired, and in desperate need of really good moisturizer. The only man in the village who hadn't stormed Desert Pussy, that's what everyone called her, Pussy, was Wesley, a farm boy. She knew Farm Boy could do it because Farm Boy fucked everything and everyone talked about it. Wesley, the farm boy, had a huge buffalo-sized penis. Not the size of a buffalo's penis, but the size of an actual buffalo. And Farm Boy's libido was so high he had to fuck all the time just to stop thinking about fucking all the time. He even pleasured the animals on the farm. But whenever he looked at Butterface, he was like, ugh! And his wanker withered and withdrew. But he wanted to keep his reputation intact for being a ladies' man, so he went up to Butterface and said, I really want to be inside of you. Ugh. I do, but my dick is disagreeing with me, so I need to leave the farm and hunt for the vitamins that will get me hard so I can look at your face without cringing. And she said, okay, but first, will you fetch me that pitcher of water over there, Farm Boy? And Farm Boy said, as you squish. As you squish was his way of telling a girl, girl, I'm going to make you come so hard, you're going to squish all of your knickers. That made Butterface so happy. So she asked Farm Boy to do stuff for her all the time. Farm Boy, fetch me some roses in the garden. As you squish. Farm Boy, shine my horse's saddle till it shines in my face. As you squish. And he'd shine the saddle and then he'd fuck the horse. Unfortunately, Farm Boy's ship got hijacked by the infamous Dread Pirate Roberts. The Dread Pirate Roberts doesn't take any prisoners, but when he heard about Farm Boy's pathetic story about Butterface, he let him live. As a gesture of thanks, Farm Boy sucked his cock. It was the smallest penis Farm Boy had ever sucked in his life, but it was a pirate's penis. So he checked that off his bucket list. In the meantime, Butterface was desperate for someone to steam up her clam. So since she never heard back from Wesley, her farm boy, she agreed to marry Prince Hump My Dick. One day while horseback riding, she was kidnapped by a couple of freaks. The first one was Mandy Patinkin. Hey, Butterface said, aren't you that guy from Homeland? Shut up, the man said. My name is Inigo Montoya. I'm looking to avenge the death of my father. He was killed by the six-fingered man. He fucked my dad up the ass so hard with his six fingers that he killed him. Wow, a man with six fingers, Butterface said. Before you kill him, would you mind if he fingered me? Six fingers might be what I need to break me free of my famine in my pants. Sure, Mandy Patinkin said, but after that I'm going to walk up right up to him and say, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, fucking him in the ass with your six fingers. Prepare to die. Fucking me. Wow, that's hot, Butterface said. I wish I could feel something down there, but I don't. And then Mandy Patinkin was gone. Suddenly a giant appeared. It was Andre the Giant Ballsack. Who was here yesterday for a podcast. How weird is that? Butterface couldn't stand being around giant Andre the Giant Ballsack because every time he walked past her, his giant ballsack would slap her right in her Butterface. Ouch! So she ran away. But the Dread Pirate Roberts found her, and when she saw him, Butterface couldn't help but notice a giant bulge in his pirate pants. She thought it might start raining in Desert Pussy, but no. False alarm. Why are you marrying Prince Hump My Dick? Asked the Dread Pirate Roberts. Because you killed my farm boy. I hope you die too. And she pushed him down the hill. As you squish. Ah, Butterface realized the pirate was really Wesley, her farm boy, and they ran right into the fire swamp where they had to fight D.O.U.S.'s, dildos of unusual size. Be careful, Wesley, there's a giant vibrating black dildo behind you. Wesley lost the fight with the giant vibrating black dildo. Of course he did. You can't beat Black Dick. And Prince Hump My Dick found them and took Wesley to the pit of despair where they tortured him by making him watch rated G movies all day and all night like My Little Pony and the Smurfs and Cat videos on YouTube. His dick was limp for days. Meanwhile, Mandy Patinkin and Andre the Giant Balzac stormed the castle. They ran into the soon-to-be Princess Butterface. She was getting fingered by the six-fingered man. "Try a little more to the left," she said. "Or may I suggest more fingers?" There are 11 in there," said the six-fingered man. "Next, you'll be asking me for toes." Frustrated, the six-fingered man looked up, and standing there was Mandy Patinkin masturbating. "Hey," said the six-fingered man, "aren't you on Homeland?" Mandy Patinkin put his penis away and replied, "Ah, you on six fingers! Hello, my name is Ego Montoya. You killed my father fucking him in the ass with your six fingers. Prepare to die fucking me." "Who the hell are you?" said the six-fingered man. "Hello! My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father fucking him in the ass with your six fingers. Prepare to die fucking me." And the six-fingered man died just like that after a lot of uncomfortable, unlubricated anal. Meanwhile, Andre the Giant Balzac found Wesley in the pit of despair watching the Today Show. He wasn't dead, but his dick sure was. It was as soft as Matt Lauer's peach fuzzy head. Andre switched stations and made Wesley watch something that would arouse him. The Kardashians? No, it only made his dick smaller. He switched to porn. Nothing. Then at last resort, Andre slapped Wesley in the face with his giant ball sack. And ta-da! Wesley's dick started to grow fast and hard. "Where are we?" said Wesley. "We need to save Princess Butterface. She's marrying Prince Hump, my dick." "It's too late," Butterface said as she walked in. "I married him." "Did you say I do?" Wesley asked her. "No, then you're not married." Suddenly, Wesley realized he was standing right in front of Butterface and he wasn't throwing up. He stuck his hand down his pirate pants just to make sure, and yes, he was harder than ever. "That's a miracle," he said. "I can look right into your Butterface and I'm not repulsed." "That's because I slapped you in the face with my giant ball sack," said Andre the Giant Ball Sack. "No," Wesley said, "it's because you're so, beautiful on the inside." No one had ever called Princess Butterface beautiful before, and that's when it happened. Butterface's water broke, except there was no baby, just a ton of backed up lady jizz. Desert pussy had turned into the Niagara Falls of sploosh. "Oh my god, look at all my goo," said Butterface. Butterface and her farm boy had a ton of sex. Farm boy flipped her fish fillet all night. Princess Butterface was wet for so long she got her first yeast infection. She also picked up herpes and AIDS. Farm boy forgot to mention he contracted AIDS from a monkey gangbang in Africa 10 years ago. But that didn't matter to Butterface. Every time she wanted to have sex with her farm boy, she'd just say, "Farm boy, will you juice up my fruit cup?" And he always answered, "As you squish." Thank you.
Carmen Lynch. And your final round one competitor, Monty Litwack. There he is. Let him hear it. Clap your hands for Marty.
"Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me." Benjamin Braddock had just graduated from college. He was worried about his future. He had just dropped off Mrs. Robinson at her home. Now it seemed like she wanted to have sex with him. "Do you want me to seduce you?" replied Mrs. Robinson. She left the room and quickly returned completely naked. Benjamin was nervous and confused. Mrs. Robinson then said, "Benjamin, if you won't sleep with me this time, I want you to know that you can call me up anytime you want, and we'll make some kind of arrangement." Benjamin couldn't control himself, so he had old wrinkly sex with Mrs. Robinson right there on the spot. Meanwhile, Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence played in the background. Suddenly, Benjamin heard Mr. Robinson's car in the driveway. Benjamin ran downstairs and waited in the living room, trying to act like nothing had just happened. Mr. Robinson stumbled through the front door. "Benjamin!" yelled a very drunk Mr. Robinson. "What a nice surprise! I'm guessing you gave my wife a ride home." Yes, Mr. Robinson, replied Benjamin. You're such a nice young boy. You're intelligent and you're athletic. A track star. You're in fantastic shape. Yes, sir, Mr. Robinson, said Benjamin. Don't you think you're in good shape, Benjamin? I think you're in very good shape. oh, my God, Benjamin stammered. Mr. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Don't be ridiculous, replied Mr. Robinson. Why, do you want me to seduce you? Benjamin was now more nervous and confused. Come on now, Benjamin, that's silly. I'm twice your age, and I'm a man, and that's not socially acceptable in 1967. But nobody has to know. Benjamin was stunned. I'm only kidding, Benjamin. Have a drink. Bourbon or scotch? Bourbon, replied Benjamin. Mr. Robinson grabbed the bottle of scotch. But instead of pouring it in a glass, he started sensually pouring it down his own pants. Oops, he remarked. How clumsy of me. It's okay, though. You'll just have to drink it as it drips off of me. With that, he unzipped his pants and revealed his now scotch-soaked penis. Benjamin stood there in silence. Mr. Robinson then stated, Benjamin, if you won't drink scotch off my penis this time, I want you to know that you can call me up anytime you want. We'll make some kind of arrangement. Benjamin was very confused. He was worried about his future. But maybe Mr. Robinson's scotch penis was his future. Not wanting to be rude, Benjamin got on his knees and cupped his hands to collect the dripping penis scotch. Not like that, said Mr. Robinson. You'll get much more if you use your mouth. Benjamin then started licking Mr. Robinson's penis dry. Meanwhile, Simon and Garfunkel's song, At the Zoo, played in the background. After 30 or 40 licks, he heard Mrs. Robinson coming down the stairs and panicked. Benjamin ran out of the house and immediately collided with a man on the sidewalk. What the hell is wrong with you? The man yelled. Benjamin was flustered, but suddenly he realized that he recognized this man. Standing in front of him was baseball legend Jackie Robinson. I'm so sorry, said Benjamin. I'm just worried about my future. What do you even have to worry about, said Jackie Robinson. You seem like a fine young man in fantastic athletic shape. Seriously, you have big, strong legs. Oh, my God, replied Benjamin. Jackie Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Ha, laughed Jackie, that's ridiculous. Why, do you want me to seduce you? Benjamin stared in disbelief. Here, said Jackie, why don't you take a swing of my baseball bat? With that, Jackie Robinson pulled out his Louisville slugger, which was actually his penis. Benjamin stood there in disbelief. Listen, said Jackie, if you won't swing my penis bat this time, I want you to know that you can call me up anytime you want and we'll make some kind of arrangement. Benjamin was confused, but he was worried about his future. What if Jackie Robinson's penis bat was his future? Benjamin reached out and started swinging Jackie's penis bat like it was Game 7 of the World Series. Meanwhile, Simon Garfunkel's cover of Scarborough Fair played in the background. And with that moment, Jackie Robinson made history by becoming the first African-American baseball player to seduce Benjamin. Benjamin went home, exhausted from being seduced by three people in 15 minutes. He lay in his bed staring at the bookshelf in front of him when suddenly a book caught his eye. It was a hardback copy of Daniel Defoe's classic, Robinson Crusoe. Why is it a hardback book, thought Benjamin? Why not paperback? Why is it so hard? Suddenly, Benjamin shouted at the book, Oh my God! Oh my God! Crusoe with the first name Robinson! You're trying to seduce me! Benjamin was confused. The book said nothing, because it was a book. He was worried about his future, but maybe Robinson Crusoe was his future. Benjamin pulled out his bookmark, which was actually his penis, and rammed it repeatedly into the book. Meanwhile, Simon and Garfunkel's The Dangling Conversation played in the background. Benjamin couldn't sleep. He was being seduced into delirium by Robinsons. Maybe I'll just watch some TV, he thought. Benjamin clicked on the TV, and he was immediately mesmerized. On the screen was a rerun of the 1960 film Swiss Family Robinson. Benjamin couldn't take it. He started banging his hands on the glass of the TV screen while screaming, "Swiss Family Robinson! Swiss Family Robinson! You're trying to seduce me!" Benjamin pulled out his penis and started jamming it into the television. Meanwhile, Paul Simon's Me and Julio down by the schoolyard was playing in the background. Benjamin's father heard the noise and burst in the room. "Benjamin, what's the matter with you?" "I'm just worried about my future," Benjamin replied, tears streaming down his face. Suddenly, the fuzzy, staticky feeling of the TV screen was too much for Benjamin's newly graduated testicles. He ejaculated all over the antenna and then collapsed in a catatonic pile on the floor. Epilogue. Days after the incident, Benjamin was committed to a Pasadena mental institution. His first day, he was restrained with a straitjacket, while a tiny straitjacket was made for his penis. Benjamin kept rambling, "I'm not crazy, I'm just worried about my future." A man in a white coat entered Benjamin's room. "Hello, Benjamin," said the man. "I'll be treating you during your stay here. My name is Dr. Robinson." Thank you.
Monty Litwack, you sir, there, man. Let's get everybody from round one back out. Round one, everybody. Let's just assume that they will appear. You guys are going to be voting on a winner from that round. First, I'm going to remind you of what...
Round one!
Of what everybody wrote. So no voting yet. I'm just going to remind you, we started with Ben Moore. Hey, there they are. We started with... don't clap for them again. They missed it the first time. They don't deserve your applause. Just know that it was glorious applause. Ben Moore with Tootsie, then Adam Pozzi with Inspector Gadget, Carmen Lynch with Princess Bride, and finally Madi Litwack with The Graduate. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Ben Moore, Tootsie. Adam Pozzi, Inspector Gadget. Carmen Lynch, Princess Bride. And Madi Litwack with The Graduate. That's a close one, but I believe that is Carmen Lynch with Princess Bride, ladies and gentlemen. Let her hear it. A round of applause for everybody from round one. Thank you, everybody.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 130 next week. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. And for details on upcoming shows, follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CEFanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.